You're listening to my best two buddies, faces made strictly for radio and not for TV, John Nicholson and Pedro.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 68. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, friend?
I'm feeling a little lost. I hadn't been to the VMware campus in a while, and there's a bunch of construction going on. And
yeah.
It's great to be back, though.
Yeah, it's interesting. We do these podcasts every week, but we're usually on like a Skype or a Zoom call. So this is interesting to be actually staring at you. You're a pretty handsome fella.
Thanks.
Well, John, we're not here to talk to ourselves. We've got a great guest this week. This is the fun part about coming on campus is you get access to so many different people. And so joining us this week to talk about the evolution or history of vSAN is the CTO of the Storage and Availability Business Unit, Mr. Christos. And I am going to completely mess up his name, but please forgive me. It's Katamanolos. Is that right, Christos?
Oh, that's pretty good.
Well, oh, man, I try. It's a tough one, but it sounds great. It makes me like want to eat Italian food when I hear it. I was like, hey, well,
quick food, I guess. Hey, great to be
Where's
here.
Where's the feta cheese?
Seriously, thanks for joining us, Christos. We've been really looking for. I've been asking you to come on for probably about 6 months now. Every time I chat with you, because I know you got a lot of experience with vSAN, but also a lot of historical information in your head. So we've really been wanting to get you in and sort of pick your brain and hear your perspective. I know you've had a lot of input in terms of the design of vSAN and also the vision. So before we go futures and, or at least what we can talk about, let's take it back to the beginning. You've been doing vSAN for since the beginning. So how did the evolution even begin to where VMware started to jump into the world of storage?
Well, actually, vSAN is, relatively speaking, a newer project. I've been with VMware for over 12 years now, 12 and a half years. And since I joined here, I've been working on storage. So in fact, we have been doing, storage virtualization and distributed storage platforms for that matter for many, many years, since 2000, 2001. Probably most of our listeners know of VMFS.
Yeah.
So, we have a lot of experience. VMFS is a cluster file system. So we have been doing a lot of those things for a long time, as long as ESX has been around, practically speaking. And more recently, after VMFS, we had other storage products like vSphere replication, which is a feature of vSphere, remote
right.
replication for disaster recovery. So another distributed storage platform, if you wish. So it should not come as a surprise to people that vSAN was really only the natural evolution.
Yeah, that makes sense.
For us. And essentially what we saw, it was an opportunity to give our customers the capability of owning and running their storage as part of, inherent part of the overall IT infrastructure that VMware helps them manage. So that was the genesis of vSAN.
That's nice. So you were early on with the vSphere replication. Was that part of a team that you worked on with vSphere replication or?
Yeah, actually, I started that project soon after I joined VMware. I think it was sometime early 2006 or so. At least the initial ideas came up then. So, and we started working on that later on in 2007, 2008. So, yeah, I was a member of the team that developed that feature. We shipped the product and actually has a lot of traction. So, definitely, once I was asked what was the contribution of vSphere replication, and the way I saw that it was, at least back then, it democratized this disaster recovery.
Yeah.
Many of our, very few of our enterprise customers could afford the existing disaster recovery products back then. And with vSphere application coming practically for free as part of vSphere, that was a great opportunity for people to put together a compelling disaster recovery plan. And especially if you combine vSphere application with a site recovery manager, SRM, it's really, a very sweet offering to customers.
That reminds, thinking back to how expensive, some of those array-specific replications, they were licensed per capacity.
Mm.
And on top of that, they had very strict requirements. I remember it cost $10,000 for an assessment to determine if you could buy replication in some cases. Right. It was kind of crazy.
Not only that, but also essentially the vendors, the storage vendors would force the customer to buy two disk arrays.
You have to buy exactly the same array.
That's such a deal.
You want to buy a slightly cheaper? No. You got to buy exactly.
Oh, yeah. So then, we skip ahead and you started working with vSAN, which is a unique approach at storage, especially, VMware, like you said, it was more of a evolution than revolution. We were going to get there and start creating storage. But to build a distributed storage system, that had to be, from the ground up, that had to be complicated, to say the least. Any thoughts around what difficulties there were, what considerations or even what driving factors motivated people to go to such a file system?
I mean, as far as challenges are concerned, definitely we're not short of those, right? And the industry has not been short of challenges. Distributed systems have often been thought of as the panacea of, solving all problems in and world hunger on top of that. But of course, they're very challenging to design and, even more so to really turn them into robust, usable products. So I see at a high level three main challenges with distributed systems, generally speaking. One is that many of the practitioners in the field lack the foundations of computer science to understand some of the fundamentals of algorithms and design of distributed systems, whether it's consensus and the fact, for example, that it is proven that you cannot achieve consensus, which is, in a nutshell, agreement between all the members of a cluster about a certain value or a certain state of the system. It's impossible to achieve consensus in a distributed system that is asynchronous, where you don't have very strict upper bounds in the timeliness by which messages are delivered, right? So this is very foundational, but if you don't understand that, then it's very hard to get your distributed systems right.
Yeah. You're either going around to corrupt data or you're going to split brain. And,
split brain is a very typical outcome.
People start playing fast and loose with
quorum. Correct. So to address some of those problems, so in the industry, we have had over a period of a couple of decades now, a number of platforms for building distributed applications. But the emphasis was on applications. Some of you, perhaps the older among us, who may remember ANSA and CORBA and, of course, all the Java-based platforms, right? Those are very focused towards applications, but there's very little in terms of tools to build real system-level distributed systems, storage, and, these kind of things. So over the last 10 years, there have been a few of those services available in the open source community, but it took them years really to mature and become production ready. And so going back to your question, one of the challenges that we had to address when we started with vSAN in, somewhere about midway in 2010 was really what of those fundamental distributed services do we need to build in terms of clustering, failure detection, distributed algorithms, data distribution algorithms, RAID, Razor codes, all those kind of things. So back then we had to build a lot of those things from scratch. If it was today, we may have followed a different approach because, there are some more mature services, say etcd or whatnot.
Right.
So yeah, it was an interesting story.
Well, and I like how you comment that there's so much foundational knowledge required for distributed systems. And from that maturity, there's so many things you have to build on top of. I mean, I feel like there's been many a great idea in computer science that was at the mercy of making the false assumption that hardware was reliable or various other things.
Right. Yes, absolutely. That's one thing. The other thing is that for distributed systems is how the networks behave. Actually, John, you probably...
Is the network lossless or not?
sympathize with that because, in practice, it's not only that the networks, they can fail, right? All systems can fail, but often with networking, we see behaviors that is not clear whether it is pathological or not. And if there are issues, exactly how do you troubleshoot them, right? So that's one thing. Also, in distributed systems, there are challenges that span the traditional operating systems technologies and networking, and in our case, storage. For example, how do you do distributed flow control for data path, right? In a large scale. So those are even today open research problems. In fact, we have worked with a couple of academics over the last few years in developing distributed scheduling algorithms in order to be able to ensure some form of performance differentiation between different classes of IO input-output operations in your system. So very, very interesting problems there.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. You've got shared resources that you don't necessarily have perfect visibility into or perfectly consistent behavior in. And how do you try to make that consistent? That's hard.
Right. And how do you deliver a predictable service out of that, right? When you need to deal with the storage device behavior, the controllers, the networking, the switches, all those things.
I thought FCOE was supposed to solve all this.
So. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I was just going to ask, I know you've worked on distributed storage for even longer than VMware, right?
Yes, that's true. I actually, I've been working on distributed systems since I had the idea of going to grad school many years ago. But really, I started focusing on storage when I joined HP Labs in 2000. And there are, HP Labs being, one of those corporate research labs, we had a little bit more leeway to experiment and test the waters with some things that were a little bit further out than what a product business unit would do. So yeah, I worked on a couple of very interesting projects there. One, for example, was a wide area distributed file system called Pangea. And the idea there is to have a eventually consistent distributed file system that could be used by multiple clients, and users from even across the globe. And everybody could do both reads and writes and have a consistent namespace, POSIX, almost semantics, and use that file system for a collaboration. So that was a very interesting, very technically challenging project. We built a real working system. It was, of course, a research system, and it got some very positive feedback from the community. It got back then a best paper award at SOSP. OSDI was one of the top systems conferences. But I mean, the truth is that system, I think, was a little ahead of its time. Yeah. There's not really many compelling use cases. We validated with a couple of big customers of HP back then, but there were just a handful of really customers at that point in time were interested in that. I'm talking about circa 2002, for example.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? So when you're building something that's not going to come out for a while, you go with a certain vision, a plan, and then you execute it. And then by the time it actually comes out, and maybe you would have done it slightly differently. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you look back and think, well, this works, but if I had it to do all over, I might have made some changes. Were there any thoughts like that with vSAN? Not so much mistakes, but any thoughts that now that it's, on its, fourth generation, like, is there anything that you think back and go, I might have done that slightly different?
Definitely a lot of lessons learned, some of which we have already incorporated, we addressed. The biggest of all, as far as I'm concerned, is the realization that in building a really usable, robust product, storage product like vSAN, of course you need to have the right engineering to do the right distributed system stuff and the right storage stack. And all these are fundamental requirements to build a system. But at the end of the day, what makes the difference is the usability of the product, the operational experience that the end user has. And that is something we realized, thankfully, early in the life cycle of the product, and we start aggressively addressing some of those open questions. For example, even simple things that how do you troubleshoot the storage aspects of your platform? How do you understand why you don't get the performance for your application that you thought you should get? So fundamental tools and APIs and UI that the customer, who is not necessarily a storage expert, should be able to utilize to deal with the operations of the system day in, day out. And that is, I want to stress this explicitly, that we designed vSAN from day one as a product that was targeting not the traditional storage guys, the disk arrays, the experts, right?
Right.
But a storage product, enterprise grade with all the bells and whistles, but a product that was nevertheless targeted to the vSphere administrator, our customer, right? We want to go and empower them to have a product that they can easily transition to managing. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you cannot really sacrifice the capabilities that you give to the end user. Even more, you need to provide better tools and more tools for people who are not necessarily experts to figure out what is going on there and understand the system.
Yeah, I think and I think a lot of companies and a lot of products, they go through that same process, right? They want to make something simple, easy to use, and a good experience, right? They want to they want the user to have a good experience, but there's this balance between simple, easy to use, good experience, and then all of a sudden you're now stripping it. So don't take away my options. I need my nerd knobs. I need it to work. I need to troubleshoot. I need it to be performance tuned. I need to be able to troubleshoot. And so I think is the way I remember it, John, is initially vSAN seemed to be pushed towards like this simple way to do storage, when actually it was a lot more complex than that. It was not complex in terms of difficult to use, but more,
it's a powerful platform.
Yeah, you know, a lot more powerful than just a simple.
It's not limiting, I guess, is kind of something that comes in when you think of something being too simple, but it's a powerful platform.
That is true. And in fact, if there is one other lesson I would take out of our experience with the product, and now we have many thousands of customers, enterprise customers that really use the product in production environments, is that I would be advising customers to when they deploy a storage platform, any storage platform, including vSAN, which is targeted in enterprise use cases, to do their due diligence, no matter what that is. Yes, it's very easy to operate, vSAN, and it's very easy to enable it on a vSphere cluster, but still you have to do your due diligence in how you size the system, what hardware do you use, what network do you use, right? How do you combine all those things? So it's not, those things need to be taken seriously. And it are a prerequisite for having a product that can satisfy your needs. It's just these things don't happen magically.
You've got to talk to your networking team, because you don't want to find out after you've already bought all your servers and your hosts, you discover you've got 10/100 hubs or something for networking behind
That's
you.
That's right. Yeah. For example, right.
Yeah. It's funny. I see a lot of storage vendors that are now moving to HCI as well. And I mean, VMware is obviously not the only HCI product out there. But it seems that storage in general, even some of the bigger companies, while they still have their discrete components, they seem, they went from this converged infrastructure solutions. I mean, like NetApp has a great FlexPod, and all the other ones have these really cool products. But even those big companies are now starting to migrate also to some HCI solution. So what do you think is next? Is not that HCI is gone, but is HCI the direction, do you think, that all storage companies should go to or are going?
Not necessarily. I don't think that HCI is, a solution to everything. And first of all, let me make clear what I mean by HCI, because we may not all of us be on the same page.
It's like, what is HCI? Pop Tart as a sandwich. Not a sandwich.
When people talk about HCI, especially if you talk with some of the more traditionalists from the storage space, they say, HCI is the thing when you run your storage stack on the same servers where you run your applications. Well, okay, that is one incarnation of the HCI model, but fundamentally what HCI means to us here at VMware and myself personally, what I envision when we started on vSAN and what we still deliver on, is a storage platform that is managed with a single operational model, a single management stack with the rest of your infrastructure. So essentially, in our case, you run the VMware software, vSphere, and the products we have around it, and you manage your entire infrastructure. Traditionally, it was compute, but then it was networking, and then it is now also storage. So you don't go to a storage console. You go to vCenter UI, or you don't use some, APIs of, some specific to specific storage vendor. You use vSphere APIs. And this is the beauty of it. All these, the APIs, the UI, even more importantly, the workflows that you use, for example, for maintenance mode, for upgrading your classes, all those are the same vSphere workflows and management abstractions you have been using if you have been a vSphere guy, a VMware guy for forever now. And now we're expanding those to cover also the storage aspects of your infrastructure. That's what HCI is, right? And I see, as a result, very few vendors being able to really deliver that vision, that can provide this comprehensive software stack that deals with your entire infrastructure. And really where things are going, I see this operational model going beyond the traditional data center, where you really own your own infrastructure and you manage it and you lose your sleep over it, but also covering the infrastructure that is offered to you from public clouds. What is the advantage of that unified operational model that I was talking about applies now in that case. You manage you know, you deploy your provision infrastructure, you consume it, you monitor it, you deploy your workloads on it using the same hyper-converged infrastructure model, no matter where your infrastructure comes from. I think this is going to be a fundamental direction for HCI going down the road, and this is definitely what VMware is, you know, is investing and targeting.
So our evil plan, if I get it correct, is just to be the software and policy layer that rules the data center and the clouds.
Right. No, your IT infrastructure, no matter where you get it from.
Yeah. You heard it here, guys. They've got us. This is our evil plan to take over the world.
I thought that was classified. So what about hardware changes? What's driving the design of, well, we'll just call it HCI, but is it the hardware changes themselves, do you think? Or is it just, you know, is that in the way, or is that what enables the direction that we go with products like vSAN?
Right. Certainly, there are multiple trends that converge to create this kind of perfect storm, if you wish, right? On one hand, we see IT teams being transformed rapidly. This is driven by two trends. One is obviously costs and trying to drive down operational expenses. The result of that is consolidation of the IT teams. We see very few organizations anymore to have those, you know, big teams of storage specialists and network specialists and server specialists and so on and so forth. We see a consolidation of skills and teams and resources for better operational efficiencies. That actually feeds into this, you know, hyper-converged model I was referring to earlier, you know, where you have, you know, one set of tools for everything. So very, very convenient. The second trend is that, as you said, that storage, so instead of the hardware is evolving, right? We already know that we have now much more powerful server platforms on which you have enough resources to be able to run not only your applications, but also cores to run, you know, the storage stack, your networking stack. In fact, that has been already happening with virtualization. And so essentially you have consolidation and consolidation not only operationally, but also you have a single hardware platform to deal with, not islands of different hardware generations and different hardware
avoiding
types.
Silos of hardware leads to silos of management teams. If we're going to consolidate those teams, we've got to not just build another silo in the data center.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, and that trend has been accelerating now with the emergence of these new technologies, especially in the storage space. Mm-hmm. We're talking about obviously NVMe, both as a protocol for accessing storage, as well as the whole generation of devices that are emerging supporting that protocol. And even further out, these new physical technologies for storage, broadly referred to as persistent memory. Mm-hmm. Essentially, now we have non-volatile memory, which is commoditized, it's available, initially in the form factor of NVMe storage devices behind the block interface. But soon, if we believe the hardware vendors, we have actually storage on your memory channel, right?
Byte
addressable. So that is going to have a fundamental impact in the industry.
Didn't we have these with mainframes? Are we sure technology is not cyclical? But it was very small, I think.
Did you notice the word commodity?
Yeah, there we go.
Not breaking the bank, but that's so. I think all those. So now, consider having all this storage next on the memory channel next to the CPU where your workload runs, right? So that encourages a model where actually the boundaries of the storage platform and your compute platform are actually getting, you know, blend with each other, right? So I think that is also going to push towards a model where more and more use cases will require some form of software-defined or hyper-converged platform,
right,
that takes advantage of these storage resources close to where the workloads actually run.
Yeah, and that's interesting because now, like, it seems like, you know, VMware is a software company. We're running primarily an infrastructure, not service, but we're selling software for infrastructure. Mm-hmm. But as the world starts to move towards cloud, and I know we have an offering in AWS, for example, how does VMware, you know, position themselves to
expand to cover?
How does VMware grow with its customers who are their demands go beyond traditional basic infrastructure management and also towards developer-ready infrastructure platforms and things like that?
Okay. Well, yeah, that's a very good question. And well, you hit here exactly the question of the vision, the long-term strategy of the company, right? First of all, at this point already, we just don't ship software for our customers to run and manage their IT infrastructure. We also provide the services for managing infrastructure on behalf of our customers and offering that as a service. And you know what? We have been doing that for a while now at a smaller scale. Obviously, our partnership with AWS is pushing now that model to a new level. So that is definitely one direction. So consume your infrastructure, no matter whether you own it or use a cloud-based infrastructure with the same software stack, the same management stack, without really any difference as far as your applications and your day-to-day operations are concerned. You don't have to replatform your applications to run them on a public cloud, right? It's a huge advantage. And that software layer that VMware offers also gives you a confidence that your way to a certain cloud is not a one-way ticket, right?
Yeah,
right.
No Hotel California.
That's exactly right. So that is one big part of the future of VMware and how we are really giving the capability to our customers to utilize the cloud without disrupting their business models, their IT teams, and so on and so forth. But there is another dimension to this. And I think if you really remember what Pat was talking about at VMworld in his keynote, he kept talking about the data center modernization. And there he hinted quite actually, to me at least, it was quite obvious that VMware is going to be moving beyond just the pure management of physical IT infrastructure and towards providing the tools to our customers to have a much more application-centric approach to how they deal with IT. Essentially, we're talking about moving towards a platform for running customers' applications. So instead of saying, I know it's subtle, but it's important in the long term. We're not just managing physical infrastructure, IT infrastructure. We're managing the infrastructure for your applications now going forward. So as you'll see there, we're going to be talking more about what it takes in terms of orchestration to deploy, provision, configure your applications in a way that is removes all that black magic that a lot of the expert IT guys had to put into place.
Yeah.
Right? So now essentially a lot of that expertise is getting into automation and software that will be delivering. Specifically in storage and data. So far, what we have been doing is virtualizing storage, providing block services. Even with vSAN, it's all about block-based storage, the most basic of storage abstractions.
That's right.
But as you see going forward, applications start consuming data using higher-level abstractions. Certainly the new generation of applications, the so-called cloud-native apps,
right.
which are designed assuming certain types of data services that you can find in public clouds. They use file services, of course, obviously objects. We all know how popular a service like S3 are, but even higher level abstractions. Actually, let me share a little joke with you. I was at a dinner party a few months ago and I was talking with a relatively young engineer who was working one of those hyperscalers in Silicon Valley. And he was working on some fancy geolocation feature in their service. And said, "Oh, really? Very interesting. Very compelling distributed system." I said, "What storage do you use?" He says, "We use Cassandra." I said, no. I mean, not what database, what storage?" Says, "What do you mean, what storage?" We use Cassandra. So it dawned on me that there's this whole generation of application developers that for them,
they don't even know what NFS is.
Let alone block, right?
Yeah. I'll throw it on the ring and hope it stays together. So.
Exactly. So however, they are 500,000 enterprise customers. They don't have the level of resources and sophistication that these big Silicon Valley hyperscalers have. right? So what we aim to do is to enable them to deploy, run, configure, monitor, fix those types of data services and consume data at those high level of, levels of abstraction. So what we can, what you know, we envision, and you know, without disclosing too much, is providing a framework, a control plane, if you wish, on top of the basic block storage, through which we can enable our customers to do all this, you know, deployment of this kind of scale out data services, support things that we have know very well how to do traditionally, such as data protection, backup, disaster recovery. Mm-hmm. Today, these are like application specific solutions which do not scale. If you know you want to incorporate all those different databases and so on, or key value stores in your data center, whether your own or something that is managed by a VMware. So this is one little example of how we envision our product offerings evolving from infrastructure management to a platform for running your applications on.
Well, if you want to be more specific and share that with you, we won't tell anybody.
Yeah, there we go. So, thinking back to that example, though, of the Cassandra, you know, with NFS, you know, most people know how to secure it or lock it down. You've got your host file. Okay, maybe Kerberos if you want to get fancy with V4. But these next generation applications, there's been a lot of high profile security breaches because of, and it's not necessarily someone, you know, found a hack for Cassandra or found a hack for S3. It's people just leave buckets wide open. Mm-hmm. And the amount of technology that VMware already brings to customers today to provide governance and consistency of configuration not only provides stability and operational, but also just fundamentally security. And if we can help bring that to more to some of these newer areas, there's going to be a lot of value with that.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I'll give you a little detail from an actual customer. I cannot share too many details, but we have customers, this customer running some of these cloud-native workloads on vSAN. And one of the reasons, or a couple of the reasons he mentioned is, one, they using virtualization and vSAN in this specific case makes storage management, he calls it the device management, so much easier. Yeah. How do you provision storage, extend storage, right? Those things are involve physical devices.
I've got to go run software RAID on the host. I've got to extend the partition table and all these other things.
And then you want to expand storage. What do? You have to go add devices, create logical volumes, expand your file systems. It's a real pain. That's one direction. The other is they had an incident which fortunately didn't really result in a major security breach. But you know, an SSD was removed from a cluster because it died and was not disposed of properly.
That
was
rest.
A good reason for them, and they discovered and before that there was an issue, but that was an indication for them that if you know of moving and to use on disk encryption on vSAN,
yeah,
so that you know they're safe, that you know even if a device somehow flies away from the data center,
exactly,
the sensitive data are not going also to disappear with it, right?
Well, and the other thing also there is I've just been impressed talking to vSAN engineering. And this has been definitely a journey for us, is how many failures at the hardware level are not binary. Things don't die, they half die, or they flake out, or maybe they're just having a bad day because of garbage collection. And those are things that some of these platforms that, while in theory they might be able to work directly with storage, they lack that maturity of dynamic failure handling and that type of prediction. And that either leads to stability or performance problems or things like that. So having someone else grown up, so to speak, who have a mature stack handle that physical layer and have those relationships with those hardware vendors and can know what's going on and troubleshoot, yeah, that,
absolutely,
that's a big advantage.
This is an extremely important point, and that's exactly why we invest so heavily on our hardware qualification processes and the certification for hardware. It's not like, you know, when I hear certain vendors claim that, oh, my software is so good, it works with any hardware. It makes me cringe, right?
You start to laugh at first, and you're like, oh God, the poor data.
Right. So, but yeah, there is definitely, it's very important, right? We have to, we qualify the hardware with every single hardware vendor. Things are tested end to end before they get on the HCL. And beyond that, as you said, really these days, especially with SSDs, now magnetic disk used to suffer for lots of mechanical problems.
Sure.
But with SSDs, a lot of the issues have to do with software bugs, right? So
yeah, bad
for the behavior of the device is really not as predictable as we wish to think. As you said, right, devices don't usually crash. They they misbehave in unpredictable ways, performance-wise or erratic behavior in terms of, you know, the latencies that are exhibited or anything you can imagine. So we've learned that the hard way ourselves. So we have increasingly working on improving the heuristics we have for whether we know what we should be doing in terms of the behavior of a device, if, and you know, either we kill the device or we power cycle it, or there are lots of tricks we play. But at the end of the day, customers should trust us as opposed to the individual application layer trying to do the right thing. Right.
So, I mean, we know how to do CPR on a mount, you know, misbehaving SSD here. We know all kinds of ways to try to kick it in HBAs and bring that back. Mm-hmm. And the Cassandra developers are great at building Cassandra, but yeah, you're right. Local drives, that may not be their thing.
Nice. Well, Christos, I know you're going to be at VMworld as every year, and you always do a lot of really good sessions. And so anyone listening out there, if you're going to be at VMworld, be sure to check out Christos Kamanoulis. I'm going to totally mess up your name again.
His sessions are amazing. And
yes, they're forward-looking. They're really, really interesting sessions.
I just remember in San Francisco, it was always over in the hotel in some tiny little room first thing in the morning, and they always poorly air-conditioned it. But I was like, I'm gonna go sweat it out to see where the future of storage is going.
Last question before you go. You at one time were managing at the exact same time Rawlinson Rivera, Duncan Epping, and Cormac Hogan and Powdy, among all those. How did you survive that time in your life, herding those cats?
For the listeners that cannot see me, my hair is all like, you know, actually grayed out now. It was perfectly nice and and brown before I got into that phase of my life. Let me leave it to that.
That's awesome. All right, Christos, thanks, and we'll see you at VMworld.
Yeah, see you there.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A huge thanks to Christos Kamanoulis for joining us this week. We'll see you next week. But until then, bye for now.
Profoundly dumbfounded.
Oh, yeah.
Pete is right.
Sí. Enough of this jibber jabber.